It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Manning back to throw. They pick up the blitz. Throws one left down the sideline into the end zone. Touchdown! Hakeem Nicks!
Nick takes the snap again. Pumps.
He's going to get sacked by Tuck. Fumbles the football. Giants have it at the 26-yard line.
Draw right for Bradshaw. Cuts at the one. Goes into the end zone. Touchdown.
Nice run by Bradshaw to run it in for 4 yards out.
Manning will throw on first and 10. Heaves one deep down the left side for Manningham, who makes the catch. Gallops out of a tackle to the 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Meadow.
And it's Big Blue Kickoff here on this Thursday morning. So glad you could join us here on Giants.com. Brought to you by Andrew Mark alongside John Schmelk. I'm Lance Meadow. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513. You can also chime in on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. Obviously, the big news of the day respecting the NFC East is the Eagles getting a new coach, Chip Kelly from Oregon, coming over, bringing his spread offense. So we'll get into that. And we want to know your thoughts as the question of the show with Kelly's arrival, with RG3 still in the division. How should that influence the Giants' offseason plans?
Well, I have some good news when we start. Despite the fact you only hear his disembodied voice, I can assure you, Lance Meadow is sitting right next to me here, and he is actually a real person.
That is good to hear.
Yes.
Yes, I'm glad that we clarified that right from the get-go.
Well, I want
to
make sure we're not
get that a little bit
later on.
We're not
pulling the wool
over
anybody's eyes.
True, yes, and that related to the Notre Dame story, which is a whole other thing.
I think they could have figured that one out.
Yes, absolutely.
Anyway,
we'll stick to the NFL storylines.
High risk move bringing in Chip Kelly. Obviously, I think for an NFL team going with a college coach coming from a college program with no NFL experience, even as a coordinator, can be a very big risk. Putting the straight X's and O's aside, dealing with NFL players as opposed to college players, you're dealing with grown men in their late 20s and early 30s that, frankly, you can't really treat the way you treat some college kids. You got to treat these guys like men. You can't treat them like boys. That's number one. Number two, the amount of work, effort, preparation, study that goes into the NFL is still, in my opinion, a much higher level than colleges. And you have to prepare for different things. And again, Chip Kelly doesn't have that experience. I think it'll be extremely important for him to bring in coordinators that both have NFL experience, that understand the NFL game, NFL personnel, the division, and how the NFL as a league works. And frankly, it depends on his quarterback, Lance. Look, every head coach needs a quarterback to succeed. And I'm not even sure Chip Kelly needs an athletic, mobile quarterback that can run the football. As long as he has someone that can throw the ball, he'll be fine. But he needs a quarterback. Every offensive coach does.
Well, they have Michael Vick in the mix, and certainly he fits under the criteria of a mobile quarterback, which is normally what Chip Kelly likes to see in his system.
They need a quarterback that makes good decisions. Let me rephrase that.
Well, they also need an offensive line that can protect that quarterback regardless
Correct.
Of whether he has legs.
Excellent point.
That is going to be priority number one for Chip Kelly and his staff to help reconfigure that offensive line, which was plagued by lack of protection all season long. That's why the turnovers piled up so much for Philly, and they were in the position that they were in this season, which was 4-12. I think they have LeSean McCoy, who certainly could fit well into Chip Kelly's system, and they have a nice cluster of wide receivers. DeSean Jackson certainly still in the mix, Jason Avant and so forth, plus Brent Celek, who has been fairly productive over the last couple of seasons, assuming he could stay healthy. It's just a matter of, like you said, can his system translate, number one, to the Eagles' personnel, and number two, to the NFL? We've seen tastes of that with respect to RG3 this season in the Redskins. They have caught a number of defenses off guard.
Yeah, but the question remains, if you run an offense like that, you know, spread option where the quarterback can either hand it off or run, the question remains, do you put your quarterback at too much risk in the long term? Can your quarterback survive running that system over the course of, let alone 16 games, multiple seasons, stay healthy and succeed? Can that work? And I think that's a question we don't know the answer to, because no team or player has run that system for a long period of time and been successful with.
And it caught up with RG3
exactly.
as he got hurt this season. You want your quarterback to be able to play 16 games. And also, look, the Eagles haven't even had a spread offensive system in place, and their quarterback still can't stay healthy. Michael Vick has been banged up. That is partially because of the way the offensive line has played. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. You could chime in on Twitter, hashtag GiantsChat. We'll read some of your thoughts in a bit. But let's open up the lines. We start with Lionel in Georgia. Lionel, welcome to the program. What's happening?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? How you guys doing?
What's up, Beltrane?
Hey, nothing much. Nothing much. That's what he called me when I played running back. But nevertheless.
Say, of course.
I'm just thinking about, you know, the Super Bowl is in New York next year. I find it kind of interesting. You guys brought up the Chip Kelly situation, which is kind of interesting, I believe. I think because I agree with you as far as bringing their coordinators in so we can get a more of an NFL feel environment. Nevertheless, that new style of play is changing the game. And you can see, you know, strikes of it in every play. I mean, in vigorous plays, you know, in certain situations. I mean, for one, Kaepernick, you know, he's killing the playoffs last year. We, as well, the Giants had a tough time taking care of RG3 in that situation early the season as well. So with that being said and done, and us having Eli, which is a quarterback, a pocket quarterback, I love Eli. I think he's better. You know, he's perfect. But what are we going to do as far as offensive play wise to counterattack and to be competitive as well when these guys have these big plays? I mean, these big calls that, you know, within one play or three plays they can score like that. I mean, plenty of times, the one thing I get frustrated about with being a Giants fan is the fact that we're predictable at times offensively.
Well,
and when we're in that bond where our defense can't pull us out and we need to score, it's either Cruz pulling us out with a miracle or, you know what I'm saying, or something like that. But, you know, I would like us to be a little more different and not be as predictable, especially when it comes to a division game.
Well, L-Train, what I would say to you is if you want to be less predictable, have the lead a little bit more. Play from ahead. When you play from ahead, it gives you a lot more flexibility in terms of what you can do in terms of running the football, play action pass, running some screens, running some draws, and that allows you to be more creative. When you're trying to come back from big deficits like you were against the Falcons, like you were against the Ravens, like you were against the Bengals, you're going to have issues in terms of staying unique, staying creative, because you can't run the football because you're down so big early.
Right. Right. I agree. Do you let me ask you this, do you think we missed Mario Manningham this season?
I think you missed Mario Manningham to a certain extent, but I think if Akeem Nicks was a healthy and 100%, I don't think you would have missed Mario Manningham as much as you did. I think Reuben Randle or Dominic Hickson would have been just fine in that number three wide receiver spot if Akeem Nicks was his old self, which he clearly wasn't.
Okay, so is that the reason why we continue to lose? While we go up every single season, we go up, and you know, as far as the division is concerned, and then we'll lose 3-4 games when all we need to do is win 2 or 3 to seal a playoff deal. Like, why do we do that every year?
You know, Lionel, if I had the answer to that, I'd be in a much better position. I'd be making a lot more money. I'd have a title. I'd be in the media guide. Frankly, the Giants have had trouble figuring that out. It's a question that's been asked to Jerry Reese, asked to Coach Coughlin. You know, some years they got hot and they played well at the end of the year, like in 2007 and in 2011. Other years, they foundered at the end of the season, like this year, like 2009, like 2008. Though 2008 obviously was unique circumstances with Burris. I don't really think there's a good answer. You know, some people say Coach Coughlin wears these guys out. Well, here's the bottom line. With the new CBA, these guys don't really have a training camp. They don't have 2-a-days anymore. You can only hit X number of days in practice with full pads over the course of an entire season. So these guys are, lack of a better term, babied over the course of 16 games now. So it's not a fatigue issue. It's not like Coach Coughlin is doing anything more to these guys than any other coaches, because everyone's playing by the same rules now with the CBA. So it's not like he's working these guys harder than any other coaches are. Frankly, I think part of it's schedule. If you look at the Giants' schedule in the second half of the year over the past few seasons, it just frankly is very difficult. You have to play two of the teams that are in the NFC Championship game over the past in the last 3 weeks of the year this year. the Falcons in the NFC Championship game, the Ravens in the AFC Championship game. You had to play both those teams. You had to play the 49ers earlier in the year. They're in the championship game. The Packers is probably the next best team after these top four. You had to play them in the second half of the season as well, not to mention Washington, who is also in the playoffs. So if you look at all the teams that they play in the second half of the year, L-Train, they're all playoff teams, and they're all good football teams.
They are. And, but, you know, last time I checked, and we can't do it every year, I understand that, but last time I checked, we were a big game team. You know, that's what I kind of pride ourselves over, you know, like we did in 2007 when we went on that road trip and took down those Giants in their own homes. And last year when we took down the Patriots, you know, once again in their own home, and not to mention in 07 we took the undefeated Patriots down as well. But, you know, we will get it together. Hopefully, you know, I love our general manager, Reese. I believe it, and I trust him, and I think he will do what needs to be done as far as getting the right personnel in to get take care of what we need getting took care of. I love Kauffman. I have nothing against Kauffman. I believe that the passion that he has for the game and his ability to be able to talk on a mutual understanding with the Giants as far as players are concerned is very good because he's able to grasp them when we need to be grasped and wake us up. I mean, you clearly saw that when we blew the Eagles out 42-7. You know, last game of the season, even though it was a banded, you know, Eagles team, but still, when it needs to get done, we're a little too late this time. We can actually take care of it. But I appreciate you guys, and I'm gonna keep representing.
All right, Lionel.
Thanks
so much for the phone call.
Feel free to call in whenever you like.
You know, John, piggybacking off of the point you brought up, the first five games of this season turned out to be five teams that missed the playoffs. Whereas you look at the final five games, four of those five teams made the playoffs. So that speaks volumes in the difference in the level of competition.
Heck, look at the Giants' final. Was it six or seven games after the bye? Six, correct? Six games after the bye.
Correct.
How many of those teams didn't make the playoffs?
Saints didn't make the playoffs and the Eagles.
Just two.
Two.
And the Saints, obviously, I think, better than their record might
absolutely
indicate. So, there you have it. If you go back even further than that before the bye, take a look. The Giants, after their first five games, which are all against non-playoff teams. Every single one of their first five games were against non-playoff teams, okay? You take those out. You have 11 games remaining on the schedule. 49ers, still alive. Redskins, playoff. Cowboys could have went to the playoff, went down to the last day of the regular season. Steelers, one of the probably the best AFC non-playoff teams.
And still in the mix.
Bengals, they made the playoffs. And then you have it. Green Bay, playoffs. Redskins, playoffs. Saints, down here, still good. Falcons, still alive. Baltimore, still alive. Philly, obviously, Giants killed them. They're having a bad year. So I think the bottom line, and you know, L-Train says the Giants have been known for winning these big games against the better teams. Maybe it's time for that reputation to disappear a little bit because they did not play well against the best teams in the NFL this year except for the two games against the Niners and the Packers. Otherwise, against playoff teams, the Giants' record wasn't exactly dynamite.
And they didn't have a lot of big leads, as you also touched on, John. Outside of those two games with respect to the Niners and the Packers, they beat up the Saints and they beat up the Carolina Panthers. Other than that, you know, these games were back and forth. They had to rally against the Bucs. They had to rally against the Browns. Remember, they had that big lead against the Cowboys in Dallas, and they barely held on. They were a fingertip away from potentially losing that game. You know, there was not a lot of comfort throughout the course of this season where the Giants got out to a 20-point lead and then were able to really work that through the rest of the contest and maybe infuse some different offensive philosophies, as Lionel was touching on. But you can't just be creative on offense for the sake of being creative. You need to learn how to close out games, how to execute down the stretch. And unfortunately for the Giants, they just were not able to do that consistently throughout this season.
By my count, just looking at it right here, 3-4 against playoff teams. They beat the Packers, the 49ers, and the Redskins once, lost to the Redskins once, the Bengals, the Falcons, the Ravens. So that makes your record 3-4 against playoff teams.
And there's plenty of those games that they would like to take back. The Steelers game for one, yep. An opportunity with a 10-point lead heading into the fourth quarter.
Second Redskins game as well. Had a big chance to win that game if their defense could have got off the field.
Very minute, the difference between missing and making the playoffs, and there were certainly a couple of opportunities for the Giants to do that. Remember, 6-2 start after the first eight games. Final eight games, when you look at things, all the Giants really needed to do was win half of those eight contests.
Yeah, they're in the playoffs.
And we're probably talking postseason right now.
Of course.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. We go to Reginald in Texas. Reginald, what's happening?
What's up, Reg?
Hey, how you doing, John and Lance?
Doing well, Reggie. What you got?
Oh, man, first of all, I love what you guys are doing. John, I love your passion, bro. I listen to you all the time.
Appreciate
first
it, man.
First thing I want to do is add some perspective this morning for my fellow Giants fans that are out there that's still feeling the way that I'm feeling right now. First of all, for us to have won two Super Bowls out of the last 5 years, but missed the playoffs three out of the last four, I still rather take the latter. Even getting deep into the playoffs six straight years, winning one Super Bowl, or getting deep into the playoffs all 7 years and not making a Super Bowl, I would still take the 2 out of 5.
Agreed.
I don't necessarily want to make any excuses for the season that we had this year. Nobody, well, the disgust that I felt from it is just frustrating, because I don't know if anybody agrees with me, but that Mike Wallace touchdown in that Giants home game is when I felt like our season. Like I said, turn. Because if we win that game, we win the division, even with the brutal games that we had down the stretch. And just like you said, John, I'm not real sure if that's coaching or if that's just the players' mentality. Because it really, other than the Carolina game, it seems as though the San Francisco and Green Bay game were the only two games that we dominated last year. And one of the gentlemen that came on the Pat Hanlon, Bob Popper Friday weekly morning show,
yeah,
he had made a point. He said that the Giants had got up for those two games probably because those are the two teams that was talking the most smack, you know, not giving us our just due last year. So they were just necessarily trying to prove a point. But you're going to have, a lot of different callers jumping on a lot of different topics. The one that I want to get out there, that I want to ask y'all's opinion the most, because maybe I was the only big fan of Ramses Barden that we had. He was disappointing all this, but I saw his upside.
Now, John Schmelk's a big fan of Ramses Barden, Reginald, so you are not the only one. That is a select group that Schmelk will join you proudly.
Oh, okay.
What you got?
Wonderful, wonderful. What I wanted to ask with that is, do you feel, because I was clamoring at the TV, I felt like even after what he did in the Carolina game, we would have been better served lining him up on the outside, letting him do what he had to do, than happened in trying to put a hampered Hakeem Nicks out on the field. Now, I know that offensive pass interference that cost us that game in Philly, I never seen him on the field, like I said, after that. And maybe y'all could add some perspective on me, because just like David Wilson was able to get out the doghouse, I feel like Ramses may have gave us a better opportunity to do what we needed to do and give us that spark. And, you know, it would have been harder for teams to probably game against him, because of their size. Why didn't he get another chance, fellas?
Well, Reginald, what I'll say about that is I think you can make the argument that they maybe shouldn't have run out Hakeem Nicks at 50% or whatever percentage he was at for all those weeks, because clearly he couldn't make those plays you needed him to make. But my argument would be, why not put Ruben Randall out there? He has more speed than Ramses Barden. He can make bigger plays down the field. You saw his effectiveness in the final week of the season. And to me, Barden was not only behind Ruben Randall on the depth chart, he was also behind Dominic Hickson on the depth chart. So I think if you're going to sit down Nicks and give him some rest, which as Jerry Reese indicated in his postseason press conference, was a legitimate option that maybe they should have taken and they considered over the course of the year, I think you would have seen a lot more Ruben Randall and a lot more Dominic Hickson and seen, bits and pieces of Ramses Barden. But quite frankly, what the Giants were missing with Nicks' injury, Reggie, was big playability down the field, speed to beat the guys deep and make some big plays. And even Ramses Barden at his best is a possession, short and intermediate size type of wide receiver. So I'm not sure he would have given you what you were missing with Hakeem Nicks. You know what I mean?
Right. But just like in those earlier games, I'm just using the games where the blitz had necessarily got to Eli. Because I looked at what Ramses Barden did against Chris Tillman in the preseason to even get that starting. I mean, not a starting job, to even make the roster spot. Because I remember it was his good game, the preseason game against Chicago, because I thought he was going to get cut. And then I seen what he did against, is it Munderman, the second corner on the other side of Carolina. He abused that dude all day on still on those short intermediate routes.
Well, the middle of the field was fairly wide open, and credit Barden for taking full advantage of that. I think the Panthers really backed off the Giants' receivers and were just trying to prevent them from being beat by the deep ball. And keep this in mind, too, Reggie. You had said why Ramses Barden didn't get much playing time after that Eagles contest. He got hurt, got the concussion, so he was not able to stay healthy. And what has been the biggest issue regarding Ramses Barden? Hasn't necessarily been a talent issue. It's been a health factor. Every time he has an opportunity to create a roster spot for himself or an every down player spot, he winds up getting hurt. And that's why it's very hard for the Giants to rely on him. That's been his biggest issue.
Right, right. Okay.
All right, thanks, Reggie.
Okay, thanks.
You got it. Thanks for weighing in this morning on Big Blue Kickoff. Appreciate it.
You could have finished your last thought, Reggie. It's all right. It's all good. No worries. Thanks for calling. We appreciate it. 201-939-4513.
By the way, on Twitter, our good friend Mike Farmer at mfarmer20 knows how passionate you are about the Ramsey's Barden chatter.
Well, you can't.
Oh, no, Ramsey's talk. Can't wait.
I controlled myself.
You did.
I tried to make a legitimate point.
And you went back and forth with Reggie, and you didn't pull out the Paul DeTino-esque response.
Well, quite frankly, Reggie was a very intelligent caller, knew what he was talking about. He had good opinions. You could tell he was a knowledgeable Giants fan. Don't necessarily agree with him on the Ramsey's Barden front. I'm not, you know, as big of a fan as others are, perhaps. But I thought I handled that fairly well.
I'm proud of you. You're really progressing.
Making some progress,
yes, absolutely.
Right?
You know,
controlling the rage
cooling
a little bit.
Down here in the offseason. You know, getting yourself prepared for what we may be talking about for this upcoming season.
Speaking of which, I want to go back to a tweet yesterday from our buddy Marcus Erickson when our question of the day was, what Giants will make the Pro Bowl in 2014? And Marcus Erickson makes the point that considering Jeff Saturday made it this year, and when he wasn't even active on hit for his team in the playoffs this year, he's going to go at Ramsey's Barden Pro Bowl 2014. Ramsey.
Well, Barden is a free agent, and if the Giants do bring him back, perhaps he will have an opportunity, or if he goes elsewhere, we'll keep close tabs on that. And speaking of Saturday, he even lost his starting job as that Packers center. Remember, they brought him in from the Colts, and then they made changes with Eric Dietrich Smith.
By the way, our question of the day, let's just throw it out there again. Chip Kelly's addition to the Eagles, RG3 still with the Redskins. Should that affect any of the moves the Giants make in the offseason in terms of preparing for those offense? Marcus Erickson, send us a message on Twitter. Again, you can send your messages on Twitter to hashtag Giants Chat. In addition to calling into 201-939-4513, he makes the point that Oregon ran a play every 20.9 seconds. The best in the NFL is the Patriots at 24.9, and the Giants struggled against up-tempo stuff, so the Giants might want to improve there, which I think there's something to be said for that. And one thing Perry Fuel does do, which I think is a legitimate criticism, we've got a lot of criticism of Perry Fuel over the past few days. And one thing people haven't brought up, which I think is something that you can't talk about, he likes to rotate players in and out a lot. And a lot of different packages based on formation. You see the Giants subbing in late. There's some confusion sometimes. And again, that's probably more on the players than it is on the coach. However, when you're playing against these up-tempo offenses like Chip Kelly runs, it's a lot harder to do those type of complicated personnel packages. The Giants might have to amp some of that back a little bit heading into next year.
Or certainly work on honing that in practice to shuffle players in and out. And jumping off of that point that you mentioned on Twitter from Marcus Erickson about that the Oregon Ducks run a play every 20 seconds or so, this is from an ESPN article that I was reading prior to the show. Under Kelly last season, Oregon ran 1,077 plays. This is in 13 games. They play three less games than a typical NFL schedule. So that's just about 82 plays per contest. Now, you look at the Eagles last season. They ran 1,079 plays in 16 contests. Two more plays than the Ducks, and they had three more games to do that.
Though, remember this now. Erickson's stat has to do with the Oregon time of possession, so the number of minutes they have the ball compared to how many plays they run. That's obviously compared to minutes in an entire game. So that's going to have the opponent's, you know, information in there. It'll skew based on opponents because that affects time of possession. By looking at plays per second, you're looking purely at when the offense is on the field, how many plays they run in X number of seconds. So I think that's probably a little bit of a better indication of exactly how fast the offense goes. Now, Oregon's defense, obviously not quite that great this year. Other teams on the field more, limits the amount of time Oregon has the ball, limits their amount of plays. But in the time they did have the ball, Oregon ran more plays per second than any team in the NFL last year. And it's almost 4 seconds the difference, which is fairly significant.
And you said that would have ranked, what, about second behind the Patriots, I believe?
No, best in the NFL was the Patriots at 21 play every 25 seconds. Oregon was one play every 21
seconds. So they would have been number one in the NFL.
By 4 seconds, which is significant.
And then if you go by the stat that I threw out, which is not necessarily the best indicator,
right,
but in terms of the number of plays per game, Oregon would have ranked 7th in the NFL. And you figure Chip Kelly is going to bring this to the forefront when he coaches the Eagles, and it goes to show you that they are going to look to really bring a fast tempo, you know, tone to this league, as well as the NFC East, and the Giants, the Redskins, and the Cowboys defenses are all going to be challenged week in and week out, especially when they have contests inside the division.
Let's see who the quarterback is, and then I'll decide how big of a challenge it's going to be.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We go to Jameson in North Carolina. Jameson, what's happening?
Yes, I have two points that I would like to share.
Sure.
And seeing if you guys agree, I think the Giants coaching staff made a mistake by I just think they should have started Randall or Hickson ahead of Nicks early on and just let Nicks fully heal. I really like Randall's capabilities. I think he is a deep threat. I think you could kind of throw the ball up to him and he could beat the man-to-man coverage and then force the safety to eventually double him, which would open up, you know, one of the slot receivers.
Honestly, in retrospect, Jameson, I think if the Giants could go back in time and jump in the DeLorean and go back to week five, win that final game that they left Takeem Nicks out, would they have rested him another 3 or 4 or 5 weeks to get him healthy for after the bye in the second half of the season? In my opinion, I think they would. And I think in retrospect, that's probably how they should have handled it. But at that time, there's really no way to know exactly how effective or ineffective Nicks was going to be trying to play through that injury.
Let me ask you this about the defense with RG3. Do you think Perry Fuel should have a defender or one defender on every play? His sole responsibility is just to hit RG3, even if, because he's very tricky with the ball, even if, like, say, the defender is running at RG3 and he knows he got faked out and he doesn't have the ball, but just hit him anyway. It kind of seems like the Giants did much more of a react than attack the Redskins. How about just attack him every play, just hit him, and if he has the ball, great. If he doesn't, he's on the ground.
Well, it's a catch-22 there, Jameson, because God forbid you hit the quarterback late, then you get penalized. So you really put yourself in a risky situation.
In that situation, but when he does that fake handoff, you could easily say, well, I thought he had a fall.
No, well, you know, you're right, Jameson, and that's one of the arguments of why this, you know, run-read option play the Redskins run, and Chip Kelly's spread pistol offense with, you know, the quarterback runs it a fair amount of the time, might not work long-term in the NFL,
right,
because it puts the quarterback in too much danger. Now, if you have a guy, say, like Cam Newton, who's 250 pounds, 6'5", and is just a monster of a man, maybe you could pull something like that off for a longer period of time. That being said, look at Dante Culpepper. That guy was a linebacker running around, and he was running, and he blew out his knee, and all of a sudden his career is pretty much over. So I think that's the question you have to look at. Based with the NFL, with the new rules, the equipment being better, and these quarterbacks a lot of times being larger guys like a Cam Newton, can they survive on the NFL level against world-class athletes that are oftentimes a lot bigger than they are? Can a quarterback survive health-wise running that type of offense? In the past, the answer has been no, but I'm not sure if we know that for sure moving forward.
Okay, thanks, guys.
All right, Jameson, thanks so much for weighing in here on Big Blue Kickoff. And, you know, piggybacking off of Jameson's question, which was whether or not Perry Fuel should have used somebody to at least get a hit on the quarterback, I think the better question would be, you know, to have somebody mimic every move that the quarterback or the running back makes. And Jaquan Williams fit that profile 2 years ago when they went up against the Eagles, and he would basically follow around LeSean McCoy and did a nice job, even though McCoy did wind up with some big games. It was only because of two or three big runs, not necessarily throughout the course of the game. Williams was hurt this season, so they did not have the flexibility and the luxury of utilizing that linebacker spot to shadow quarterbacks and running backs. If he's fully healthy this coming season, perhaps Perry Fuel can utilize him in that role, because that's important, especially if you can anticipate that the quarterback is going to take off on his own and run with the football. If a linebacker is already in prime position to make a hit, you know, you can stop and do some damage control.
Yeah, and Jaquan Williams is the right type of linebacker to use in that type of role, considering his speed, his athleticism. He can stay with quarterbacks like that. When other times, you'd have to assign a safety, whether it's Deion Grant or an Entrell Roll, to do that. But Jaquan Williams certainly has shown the athleticism where he should be able to pull that off long term.
And real quickly before we get back to the lines, the Akeem Nicks topic. Mm-hmm. You know, Tom Coughlin and Jerry Reese had mentioned that it was pretty much told to them by the team doctors that it would be a 6 to 8 week recovery timetable to get over that knee injury. Now, he was hurt in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers game, so if you want to speculate as to whether or not the Giants should have held him out till at least the bye week, the big question would have been, if he was able to return week 12, where would the Giants have been by then? And number two, right, you know, would the rust factor have taken a toll on Akeem Nicks? How effective would he have been for those final six games?
Now, Nicks did not play in that game against Cleveland. He came back against San Francisco.
And he missed
correct?
The Carolina game,
correct,
which was right after getting
so
hurt against the Bucs.
So they were 5-2, and that's when the Giants had their decision to make about Akeem Nicks. Do you leave him out for a few more games, or do you try to bring him back? So in those next five games, the Giants went 3-2. They had the big win against San Francisco, and frankly, they probably would have won that game even without Nicks, since they got a lot of their points off those turnovers, Alex Smith interceptions, okay? Do you beat the Washington Redskins 27-23 if Akeem Nicks isn't on the field, or do you lose that game? Is Victor Cruz?
It came down to that Victor Cruz play.
Open deep down the field if you're not worrying about Akeem Nicks. I know it was a blown coverage, but do you get the 27 points if you don't have Akeem Nicks in that game? Remember, with Nicks banged up, you know, they only got to 16 against them in the second game that season. So that's a fair question. They needed 29 points to beat Dallas. Do you get the 29 points if Akeem Nicks is on the field?
No, the defense extra did a lot of that.
They did. JPP's interception for a touchdown.
And Tony Romo had 5 picks in that game.
Correct. And then they lost the Steelers
strong,
and the Bengals. So maybe you have one more loss in that five-game stretch. But how many of those losses turn to wins the second half of the season if Nicks is 100%? And again, that's if he's 100%. You know, Nicks and Jerry Reese talked about 8 weeks recovery time for that type of injury. So even if he gets back, is he the same guy? Or do you hold him out just to get him back and then he's still hobbled and it doesn't help you? And quite frankly, the way the team didn't show up against Atlanta and Baltimore, and not necessarily mean they didn't try, but they just played so poorly and executed on such a low level. Does Nicks make a difference in those games? They're 20, 30-point games.
34-0 to the Falcons, 33-14 to the Ravens. The question is a fully 90% maybe even Akeem right. Nicks at that point help you beat the Ravens or the Falcons, which you needed to win one of those two contests to get into the playoffs?
And that's the question.
No
maybe,
guarantee.
Maybe you win the game against Washington on December 3rd, but since you held them out, do you lose the earlier game against Washington? So really, looking at this, Lance, in my opinion, I'm not sure leaving Nicks out would have made that much of a difference. Maybe a game. Maybe. But odds are, if he doesn't play that first game against the Redskins, maybe you don't win. Maybe you win then the second game against Washington where you only lost by a point. Your record's still the same.
Yeah, some wins could have turned into losses, and losses could have turned into wins. And the other thing to keep in mind, you know, Reuben Randall, where he was in his development, John, at the time of Akeem Nicks' injury.
Much better player later in the year.
So how could you rely on Reuben Randall from the stretch of week 3 to week 10 leading up to the bye? And Dominic Hixon, remember, got hurt during that period of time. So who are you turning to? Ramsey's Barden and Victor Cruz is your two options that you're going to line up? And are you going to have as many wins over the first 8 games with those two compared to at least a 50% Akeem Nicks?
Remember, Hixon had that concussion as well, so he was out for a part of that early season. In fact, I'll look that up. Why don't we take the next call, and I'll take a look to see when Hixon missed those games.
Back to the lines. We go to David in New Jersey. David, what's happening?
Hello?
How you doing, David? What you got?
My name is Casey. K-A-Z-Y.
Casey, okay.
Oh, sorry, Casey.
Sorry
what's
about
up?
That. What you got, Casey?
Yes, I'm wondering what everybody's talking about the offense. At the same time, I'm looking at the cornerback. Like, the only safety, he did good, Stevie Johnson. I think he should have made the Pro Bowl. He had good nine interceptions, the safety. But the cornerbacks can't cover nobody now. The Nakamura, he ain't show up. Westbrook getting old. We need some cornerbacks.
Well, I think Prince made some progress this year, Casey. I think he got a little bit better. You'd like to see some more from him next year. And no one will argue with the fact that Corey Webster had a rough year at times. He had the hamstring earlier in the year. He had the broken hand earlier in the year. Those two things, I think, kind of dogged him all year long. But you're right. The Giants do need some improvement at cornerback, but I think part of the blame for that can go on the pass rush. You can't expect your DBs to cover for 5, 6, 7, 8 seconds when your team's entire defense is based around your pass rush getting to the quarterback, and the Giants didn't do that this year consistently.
Yes, you're right. But Justin Tuck and them got to be – Justin Tuck, we got you, Minora. It's too much experience for that line not to get to a quarterback. It'd be no excuse for that line not to get to that quarterback.
And you're right. No argument there. I think with the talent they have on that defensive line and the success that these individuals have had in seasons prior, it is a bit mind-boggling why the pass rush was non-existent at times. But, you know, what John was bringing up, if you can't get to the quarterback consistently, you're basically leaving your secondary out to dry at times, or you're putting a lot of pressure on them to make plays and force turnovers, which happened earlier in the season. And Stevie Brown, one of the players you were alluding to who had 8 on the season, but when the turnovers are not there and the pass rush is not there, who's making plays for you?
Yeah, a lot of quarterback had a lot of time, and they took us apart, too. Cincinnati game, they took us apart. Baltimore game, they didn't show up. And sometimes, it looked like Eli Manning knew what was going on. He was shaking a lot. He threw a lot of interceptions this year, too. He threw a lot of interceptions. And in a lot of games, it's his fault, too. We threw a lot of interceptions in that red zone, too. Had a couple in that red zone that hurt us that could have won a couple games, too.
And the most notable interception probably that stands out to me is week 4 at the Eagles. They're in the red zone, as you just alluded to. Martellus Bennett, Eli Manning was trying to get for a touchdown. It gets picked off. They don't even walk away with a field goal.
Underthrew the ball. Bad pass.
And you lose 19-17. You get a field goal. Perhaps it doesn't come down to that Lawrence Tynes 50-yarder at the end of regulation.
Yes. Like the Eagles, we should have won. We should have beat them. First time we played them, we should have beat them. A lot of games we had. Like they said, Pittsburgh, we had that game. A lot of games we should have won. We should have been in the playoffs. Because we proved. We would have made playoffs. San Fran standing right now. We would have won another Super Bowl because San Fran can't beat us. We got their number. We went to San Fran and destroyed them 26-3.
Well, the Niners are a different team now, though. Keep that in mind. Colin Kaepernick under center. They run some new schemes. The defense a little bit healthier. I mean, granted, they did a nice job, the Giants, against Alex Smith and company, but it's a long way from that contest.
And remember, last year in the playoffs, the Giants only beat the San Francisco 49ers in that playoff game because of a muff punt and a fumble punt. If those two things don't happen, the Giants don't win that game.
Yeah, but everybody's saying Atlanta can't beat San Fran. I think Atlanta's going to surprise them and beat them. We got a lot of offense, and we couldn't stop them. Everybody's sleeping on Tony Gonzalez, and they got Julio Jones, and they got Ron White. I think they got a good chance to beat San Fran and they home. Everybody's doubting them. They're putting San Fran ahead of them. But I think Atlanta can pull this one off.
Hey, I agree. I think Atlanta has a very good chance in that game. The spread in the game, I think it started out of 3, it jumped to 4.5, which means in Vegas a lot of the money is going on San Francisco. But to me, I think Atlanta, it's a coin flip game. I think the Falcons at home, Colin Kaepernick in that dome. Let's see how he handles the noise and the pressure of playing on the road in the playoffs. I think it'll be a very, very interesting game, to say the least.
Yeah, well, he had one big game, but they put him ahead too much, like he all that. He's all right. Just like they beat them. They got to look at Atlanta. Seattle beat the hottest team in the NFL. They beat Seattle. That's the hottest team in the NFL. They win. Seattle destroyed San Fran. That's why they keep on thinking Atlanta just going to rule. I think Atlanta's going to beat them because Seattle was the hottest team in the NFL. And my case of the rookie of the year, you got to give it to Russell Wilson, too. Or you got to split it with RG. Or Russell Wilson. I think Russell Wilson did better than Luck and did better than RG3 and was farther than both of them. And he exceeded his expectations, Russell Wilson.
Hey, I happen to agree. I think the Rookie of the Year, and thanks a lot for the call, we appreciate it, is one of the toughest awards to give out that we've seen in a while. And you can throw MVP in that mix, too, because the Peyton Manning, Adrian Peterson thing is very tough. Same thing for Comeback Player of the Year with both those guys. Russell Wilson had an unbelievable year. He was helped by playing in a weaker division with teams like the Cardinals and the Rams. They had a very good defense, a very good running game, so he wasn't asked to do a ton. But then again, neither was Robert Griffin III. They ran the ball first and foremost as well. He wasn't asked to do quite as much. Quite frankly, based on what they asked their quarterback to do, I think Andrew Luck was probably asked to do more than those other two guys. But then again, the Colts' schedule was kind of soft. And when they got to the playoffs, had to play a better team, he didn't look that great either. So I think it's a tough call.
I don't know if you could take into consideration, though, the level of competition. Listen, you play who's ever on your schedule, and the Colts weren't a playoff team the prior year.
You can consider, though, what the team asks you to do as a player.
And I think Andrew Luck, I agree with you, compared to what Russell Wilson and RG3 have had to do, Luck had to take more on his shoulders from an offensive perspective and carry that team at times. Because remember, if you rank all three of those defenses, John, Indy's probably at the bottom of the barrel because Washington's defense progressively got better.
A little bit.
As Haslett tweaked the scheme and they lost players and moved players in and out of the system. But Russell Wilson did a tremendous job, and you have to wonder, given how the Seahawks got hot late, will that influence the vote? You know, they don't necessarily take into consideration what a player does in the postseason, and it shouldn't influence it, but the fact that the Seahawks probably played their best football in that final five-game stretch, did that give him an edge over Andrew Luck and the Colts, who pretty much had solidified a spot? They had to win a game or two down the stretch, but they were looking good to get in, and RG3 and the Redskins, you know, they had to go on that seven-game winning streak late in the season, but as you mentioned, to me, it was the Alfred Morris show. And RG3 got hurt. Kirk Cousins came in. Maybe it's more of how effective the skin system is than it is RG3. I would think Russell Wilson, like the caller brought up, is probably the leading candidate for that Rookie of the Year award.
Well, just based on stats here, I'm taking a look at it. Russell Wilson, out of those three quarterbacks, had the best quarterback rating of a flat 100, which is really unbelievable. He had 26 touchdowns, only 10 interceptions, completed 64% of his passes, and had 3,100 yards. I don't have the rushing yards in front of me, so I can't give you that. But if you go down to the next guy on that list, just in regards to the quarterback rating, you get down to Andrew Luck, who I'm trying to find here. Let's see. Where does Andrew Luck pop up on the quarterback list? Why is he not on
this
list?
Was it ranking him by AFC or NFC quarterbacks?
Yeah, no, this is NFL, and they have him ranked by quarterback rating. And I do not see Andrew's Luck.
Andrew Luck is right there. He's number 24, I believe.
Wow. He is, 26. Only a quarterback rating of 76.5. He had 4,300 yards. So, like I said, they asked him to do a lot more than Russell Wilson, more than 1,000 yards.
And they didn't have a good running game.
23 touchdowns, but 18 interceptions as compared to Russell Wilson's 10. That's where the big difference comes in there. So, again, I think Russell Wilson had better numbers, but Andrew Luck was asked to do a lot more. That's why he had a few more mistakes. And then you have Robert Griffin III, who had a higher quarterback rating than both of them at 102.4, had 20 touchdowns, only 5 interceptions, had more yards than Russell Wilson through the air with 3,200, had a higher completion percentage at 65.6, and he had the ability to run the ball on top of that. So you know what, Lance? I disagree. I think RG3 has to be the leading candidate. He's better at Russell Wilson in every statistical category, and they won their division. There's not one statistic where Russell Wilson outperformed RG3 except for total touchdown passes. And that's because the Redskins had such a good running game, they could run the ball. And if you count RG3's rushing touchdowns, I'm sure he has more touchdowns than Russell Wilson does.
Oh, Russell Wilson, though, made a lot of plays for the Seahawks down the stretch with his legs. I don't know. I think it's more neck and neck. And I don't know if the voters are all going to look at the numbers as closely as you just did.
Well, I hope they would. This is the, you know, you vote for MVP here. These guys get big bonuses in their contracts. I would hope they're looking at the stats. I just don't know what the argument is for why, and maybe throw it out there. Why do you think Russell Wilson deserves it more than RG3?
I think they're both deserving. I don't know necessarily if it's a question if Russell Wilson deserves it more. I think you can make I think you can make a strong case for both of them, given the success of the team, what they brought to the table, and also how quickly they developed in their first year in the league. Russell Wilson had more college experience than RG3 because he was a transfer from NC State. That doesn't mean that you hold anything against RG3 because the Skins adapted their system based on his strengths, just as the Seahawks did. Remember, early in the season, and Pete Carroll even admitted this, they had the training wheels on Russell Wilson. They said, we're going to feed the ball to Marshawn Lynch. We're not going to put pressure on Wilson. We'll allow our defense to make plays. And then all of a sudden, you get down to week 9, week 10, they're in contention for a playoff spot. They ask Wilson to do more. He accepted that role, and he thrived. So that, I think, says a lot about his development, and that's going to probably sway some of the voters. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. We've also been talking about our main question of the day, Chip Kelly now joining the NFC East. How should that influence the Giants' offseason moves? And we have probably a name that I'm going to butcher. At FT Wardock, being a Duck fan, the answer is depth and speed, not necessarily in that order, but both are needed with respect to the Giants' defense, needing depth and speed to counter that Chip Kelly offensive scheme.
Which I think is fair. You know, you run that high-tempo offense, you're going to want to, you know, give your defensive players some amount of rest, and I think building their stamina is an important thing too. And someone brought this point up on Twitter the other day. I forget who it was. I think it was a National NFL writer. I can't remember for the life of me who it was, but who Chip Kelly hires as a strength and conditioning coach could become very important. If you want to run that high-paced offense, these guys got to be ready to, you know, run back to the huddle, run more plays, and do all these sorts of things like that. So I think that is a really a big part going forward here in terms of getting his players ready for it.
And also how he runs his practices. With respect to Oregon, it wasn't a lot of breakdown of X's and O's. If you read an interesting article on Grantland, which you had forwarded to me the other day, the fact that he tries to maximize, Chip Kelly, what he gets done in his practices. They run a lot of plays. It's basically almost a simulation of games. So if they're going to be worn down in practices, you're right, John, they are going to be they're going to need some excellent trainers to get them in shape come Sundays. The last thing he needs is a bunch of guys that are not going to be ready to get through four quarters week in and week out. Go back to the lines. We've got Jay in D.C. Jay, what's happening?
Hey, good morning. I'm John and Lance.
I'm calling
to speak about Dominic Hixon. I truly believe that the Giants have to bring this guy back. I look at Dominic Hixon over the past few years. Other than his injuries that plagued him, he has been a solid wide receiver for Eli Manning. To me, I think Dominic Hixon could be Eli Manning's Amani Toomer. That's just how I feel. Now, I'm not saying the guy has to go first, second, or third, but at least fourth string wide receiver, someone we can put in when Eli really needs him because he trusts him.
Yes, so I think he can be Eli's trusted guy to go to on third downs and things of that nature. But Toomer, remember, was a guy that caught nearly 80, 90 balls every year. I don't think you're going to get that type of production out of Hixon. But I think he can be the guy that Manning trusts and go to in big spots because you're confident he's always going to be in the right spot right. And he has such good hands.
And that's what I meant by that. I'm only talking about as far as the reception. I was saying as far as the trust.
Right. Yeah.
Because every time, I mean, if you look at Dominic Hixon, he always, most of the time, comes through for Eli Manning. A lot of times comes through in tough situations when we need them. And can I bring up something else? If you guys don't mind, I've been a little bit. I might have to vent. If you don't mind. I was listening to your show on Tuesday, and I couldn't call in after the caller because I think it was the last caller. And the guy brought up about Perry Few.
Oh, that was our favorite caller, Jay. Thank you so much for bringing that back to the forefront.
I got to because it made me really upset that he made a comment like that. Like sometimes the Giants fans say some of the absurd things. Now, I have to agree with him and disagree. I agree with the fact that he said he shouldn't be smiling on the sideline when the Giants are down 20 points. I agree with him at that point. But as far as to fire the guy because you see him smiling on the sideline or having a chuckle or a laugh with a player, that's just absurd. Like, that's crazy. I mean, you got to look at you're saying you're going to disregard all the guy has done for the Giants defense, not just win a Super Bowl for the Giants, and just disregard all that because you see him on the sideline when we're down 20 having a laugh. Like, I think that was one of the most craziest things I've ever heard. That's like saying if a doctor walked, you know, your mom has 1 hour left in her life to live, she died from cancer, doctor walk in and give you the bad news. You know, you walk out the room, you see the doctor laughing with a coworker, what, you going to go send a petition to say fire the doctor because he's laughing out, he just delivered the bad news? I just think that was the most absurd thing, to take a guy's job from him and just disregard all that he's done just because you see him laughing on the sideline. And
Jay,
I just had to bring that out to the open because that was the craziest comment I ever heard a fan say.
Preach to the choir, Jay. We're with you.
Like, and, you know, I'm like, how can you say something? You feel, and then when you said about if, you know, the Giants down 20 and you see a friend do something very hilarious, and he's going to sit there and say he's not going to laugh. Like, that's, I mean, who are you lying to?
You're right.
Well
said. Well, you know, Mike in Long Island apparently is a very serious individual. He's not a big fan of the smiling, not a big fan of the laughing, especially when things are going poorly. He's serious all the time, and, you know, it must be a lot of fun watching football with him.
Sometimes you got to laugh instead of cry.
Exactly.
If the Giants are down 20 and we have a minute left to play, you already know that game's over. We're not about to come back in no minute and score 20 points. That game's over. So, I mean, sometimes you have to laugh to build up the guys, you know, to build them up sometimes because you don't want them going into the next game with that loss on their mind.
And sometimes things are so bad, it's actually comical.
Right. Sometimes, you're right, because for the Giants to be that good and think that bad, sometimes you got to laugh. And I just had to get that off my chest because I just thought that was the most absurd. I couldn't call Tuesday because he was the last caller, but that was just the most absurd thing I ever heard. once again, guys, thank y'all for taking my call. I love the show. I listen every day.
Thanks, Jay.
And,
appreciate
you guys,
that.
Take care.
All right,
thanks for calling,
too.
Jay. Now I want to get Mike Long Island back on the line. Maybe he can defend himself a little bit.
Mike from Long Island, meet Jay from D.C. We may have to arrange a meeting between the two. We'll have a chippiness meter. We'll see.
Fireside chat of some kind.
Exactly. You know, because see, Jay bringing the personality to the table. Mike from Long Island, you know, maybe the off season, but he's hard at work. I mean, he is studying Chip Kelly's movements on the sidelines right now, evaluating.
Well, here's the question. The
his
Giants,
emotions.
The Giants had a disappointing season. They didn't make the playoffs. Will Mike laugh before opening day next year?
That's a very good
question.
Or is
he going to be in a bad mood all summer?
What happens if something positive happens at OTAs and minicamp? Does that give him maybe some enthusiasm?
Well, the question is, where does he draw the line? Is it free agency? Does that begin the start of the new season? Or is it the draft? Can you be happy
when
about the
draft? When can he turn
thing?
A new page?
Exactly.
That's
when
tomorrow's question.
Okay.
Excellent idea, John. I like where you're going. We are going to throw it out. Friday's show, Big Blue Kickoff.
When can Mike from Long Island
turn the page?
Turn the page and get over the season.
And Mike's more than free to weigh in on that.
I'd love to hear from Mike on this. And Mike, you know, we're just teasing. We appreciate you calling. You called in two straight days. We appreciate it. Thanks for listening. You're our guy. But, you know.
It was what defensive statistics he brought up yesterday, I believe, because he did call in back-to-back days. He was challenging your numbers a bit.
I think, Mike, if we have a theme for you, Mike, our theme is this. Smiling and laughter sometimes is the best medicine.
Especially to get over a lengthy offseason.
Yes. Or a disappointing football game if you're in the building. Get a little laugh. Get a little bit smile. It's okay.
It's human nature.
There's no reason to, you know, drive yourself into the dumps. I'm not saying, you know, yuck it up and be happy, but, you know, if someone does something funny, even though the Giants are down big, it's all right to laugh.
Got to keep things loose. Nothing wrong with
and
that.
And keep things in perspective as well.
Very true. As most Giants fans would say, two Super Bowls in the last 5 years, nothing to complain about.
Not bad.
I think most teams and most franchises would take that.
I think they would.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. Back to the lines. Frankie in Rhode Island. Frankie, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, guys? I love the show, man.
Thanks a lot, Frankie. What you got?
I'm calling about the defensive coordinator also. I got two Super Bowls in 5 years, but we expect to win every year. And two worst seasons of a good defense. Fire them. Fire the offensive coordinator. Fire them all. We don't do no trick plays on offense. None at all. You can't surprise the defense. Run pass. Throw a reverse in there. Throw a halfback pass. Help us out. Defense, definitely new coach.
No, Frank, I hear you, but it's not like the Giants had a 4-12 season, all right? They actually won just as many games in the regular season this year as they won in the regular season last year. And the Giants haven't been under 500, I don't think, since, what, 2005 the Giants haven't finished with, 2004 haven't finished with a record of under 500. That's a pretty good track record here for a guy like Kevin Gilbride for his offense developing a young quarterback and Eli Manning into a Pro Bowler, and the Giants have not finished under 500 since 2004. That's pretty darn good.
It's good. They got talent. I'm just saying, throw in some trick plays. Don't go with the old-fashioned style all the time. Make the fans happy. Do some halfback passes. Do some reverses. I want to see some interesting plays. I watched the whole league. Everybody's doing trick plays but the Giants.
Frank, I hear you. That has nothing to do with the offensive coordinator. It doesn't matter who the offensive coordinator is. Tom Coughlin is not a trick play guy. And I know that probably surprises you. You would think he's just, you know, outside the box, run end arounds and halfback option passes every play. But obviously I'm being sarcastic. Trust me. It has nothing to do with the offensive coordinator. Not doing trick plays on special teams or on offense has a lot more to do with the head coach than it has to do with the offensive coordinator.
Hey, so fire him then, too.
Oh, you want to fire
Frankie, come on, man.
Frank,
where's Mike from Long Island? Jeez, I mean.
All I see is these Patriots fans going crazy while I'm home watching them play instead of my team.
Well, did you enjoy last year when the Giants knocked the Patriots out of the playoffs and beat them in the Super Bowl? How'd that work out for Bill
Belichick
and
the Patriots?
What
about when they ruined their perfect season? How about that?
No, that was the best. I'm not complaining about that.
Well, I mean, come
like
on. You can't have your cake and eat it all the time, Frankie.
Hey, well, at least get in the playoffs.
All right, Frank. All right, appreciate the call.
Why we choke every end of the year? Why is
it's not
that?
Every year.
Got to change.
It's not every year, Frank. It's not every year. Two Super Bowls in 6 years. It's not every year.
You guys, I understand you're fighting strong, man, but our defensive coordinator, how about that? Why would we allow the two worst seasons ever with that kind of defense?
Hey, look, the argument can be made that the Giants' defensive rating in terms of total defense over the last 3 years, since Prairie Fuel has been here, is not where you want it to be. It could be better. I'm not arguing with that. But remember, it was poor the year before under Bill Sheridan. So is this a talent issue or is it a coaching issue? Is it Perry Fuel's fault that JPP had 6.5 sacks this year? Is it Perry Fuel's fault that Justin Tuck had a down season? Is it Perry Fuel's fault that Corey Webster got eaten up by Torrey Smith, which, by the way, Champ Bailey did as well, when they played him at the end of the year? I just wonder if these are coaching problems or these are personnel problems, Frank. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand, man. I'm just so much of a Giants fan. I want to see a perfect game every game.
And we respect that, Frankie. And we respect that and appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much
for
weighing in this morning.
All right, buddy. Thanks.
I'll even throw in, is it Perry Fuel's fault with all the missed tackles that happened this season?
Yeah, that's a good one, too.
I mean, there's a
laundry list. Not stopping the run.
There's a lot that you could throw out there that went wrong on defense, and it's not necessarily just because of the defensive coordinator.
Maybe it's something about Long Island that gets these people all fired up. Guys fired up.
Well, Frankie's from Rhode Island.
Oh,
maybe,
I thought it was Long Island.
The island.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Rhode Island. Okay, I take it back.
Different
that,
island.
That didn't make any sense.
Yes.
Never mind.
It's okay. We'll allow that.
Well, you know what? I really feel Frankie's pain now. If he's in Rhode Island, that's Patriots country. So he's
which he alluded to.
Exactly. So he's probably hearing it from Patriot fans all the time. And that can get frustrating. But you know what? If a Patriot fan says something to you and you're a Giant fan, your
Giants
answer
have their
is
number.
Simple. They destroyed the perfect season. They beat him in the Super Bowl last year. I mean, come on.
They beat him twice in the Super Bowl. And they ruined the perfect season, as I mentioned. I think that's plenty of ammunition.
Patriot fans, it's not quite that, but that's like the same thing. Before the obviously big comeback in 2004, that's like a Red Sox fan saying something to a Yankee fan. Before the, obviously the big 3-0 comeback in 2004, you just can't do it. The Giants have beaten the Patriots when they've had to beat them every time.
And here's another thing that I just want to jump off of what Frankie said, and I respect his passion. Cannot blame him for that.
Love it.
Bring that every single day here on this program especially. But he pointed out the fact that the Giants should run trick plays to appease to the fans. And that's where I disagree. Look at the Jets, for example. Jets fans were calling for Tim Tebow to be the starting quarterback at one point this
which
season.
Which I still don't get, but whatever.
Now, Rex Ryan could have easily said, you know what? We
Screw
won't
it.
Hear the boos at the stadium. Yeah. Everybody will be happy. They'll buy a couple of extra beverages at MetLife Stadium. Everything will be honky-dory.
We can sell, like, some Tim Tebow merchandise.
Absolutely.
It'll be good times.
We'll put his photo in the front of the stadium, blow up balloons, you name it. Is that going to translate to wins?
And that's what makes fans happy. What makes fans happy is winning football games. And if you're an organization, a coach, a general manager, whatever, you cannot make decisions based on what your fan base wants. You do what you think in your expert opinion, and I know Giant fans might not want to hear this, but Tom Coughlin, Kevin Gorebine, and Perry Fuel do know more about football than you do. They know more about football than I do. They know more about football than Lance does. They probably know about football than all of us put together. You pay these guys a lot of money to make these types of decisions, to do what they think is best for the Giants to win football games. And remember, it's not like these guys are complacent, folks. Coaches every year basically play with their jobs on the line. Things could have went so bad this year for the Giants. If they go 1-15, there's a chance that Tom Coughlin's not back next year. If you have that much of a disastrous season, these coaches and coordinators, they play for their jobs every year. They do everything they can and work their rear ends off. Trust me, they're here till midnight every day during the week, during the season. You see their cars in the lot, I'm leaving at 8 o'clock, their cars are still here. They're doing their best to win football games for their own livelihood. Heck with the fans at that point. They're doing it to save their own jobs, and they have pride in what they do. So trust me, these guys are doing all they can to win these games.
And they're doing a lot of work now to try to tweak the roster and right the ship and get the systems in place for next season. It's hard to make drastic changes, and as you just touched on, John, when you literally miss the playoffs by one game. I mean, does that mean that you need to rock the boat and completely overhaul a team that is not even 2 years removed from a Super Bowl?
Well, I think there's a middle ground here. There's staying the course, which is one way to go. And then you have completely rocking the boat and rebuilding and starting over, which is approach number two. I think the Giants are pretty much square in the middle of those two things. I don't think they can afford to completely stand pat and bring back the same team because they've showed the last 2 years they're inconsistent. They're basically around 500 team. They won 9 games the last 2 years. And you want to be better than that. So you want to try to improve. So you do want to make changes. That being said, you don't want to make too many changes because once you make too many changes, That's a situation where you almost have to take a step back in order to take a step forward. And I don't think the Giants are in a position with their talent, their quarterback, their coaching staff, et cetera, where they need to take a step back to take a step forward. I think they can build on what they have, make some tweaks, make some changes to get better, but no need to blow it up, especially in the coaching staff.
And they've tried to infuse some youth the last couple of seasons throughout the draft. But, you know, as you just also touched on, they have a group of veterans that they need to determine who do we keep and continue to build around and who do we maybe part ways and try to get younger. And I think those questions are at the forefront with respect to the offensive line, the linebacker core, and even the defensive line. And those are going to be the areas that they're going to try to shore up. Chip Kelly was the big topic of discussion today. Just want to read out a couple of more tweets regarding whether or not the Giants should have their offseason plans influenced based on Kelly's arrival and his offensive scheme. Daniel Noto at DS Noto weighing in. It shouldn't change anything. The Giants need to fix the same holes they had before. And then our good friend Mike Farmer weighing in again and touched on something that you had alluded to earlier, John. He says, the team I am worried about least in the NFC East is the Eagles, mainly because of their quarterback situation. And you said that we're really not going to know how effective Kelly's system is depending on who he puts under center. Is Nick Foles the most suitable quarterback for a Chip Kelly offense? Don't know if I'm sold on that. Is Michael Vick the best quarterback? Maybe I'm a little bit more sold on that, but who's blocking for Michael Vick? That will help sell me even more as to whether or not he could sustain a 16-game schedule.
And then Dos Mice at Two Corns writes in, Chip Kelly, who cares? Ask Steve Spurrier how it goes in the NFL for college coaches, and that's how worried he is about the Eagles. I get that, and college coaches, whether it's Nick Saban or whoever, have had some issues in the NFL. That being said, these big-time college coaches oftentimes take over bad NFL programs, that teams that are not very good, they don't have the talent, and most important, I said this at the start of the show, Lance, they don't have the quarterback. Who did Steve Spurrier have as his quarterback in Washington? Danny Werfel? Who did Nick Saban have as his quarterback with Miami? Cleo Lemon? Seriously.
Yeah.
These college coaches, I don't care if it's Vince Lombardi or Tom Landry. If you're running out Cleo Lemon and Danny Werfel in the NFL,
hard to win.
You're not winning games. So let's see what the quarterback, what the Eagles, excuse me, do with their quarterback position. Do they bring back their young guy, Nick Foles, and let him try to run Chip Kelly's offense? We'll see. Does that match what Chip Kelly wants to do based on how he wants to run his offense in the NFL? We'll see. But until we know who the quarterback is for Philadelphia, I don't know how good or how bad they'll be this year. Remember, their numbers offensively and defensively weren't terrible this year. What killed the Eagles was turnovers. So if you can figure out a way to protect the football, take advantage of LeSean McCoy, take advantage of your skill position guys. You mentioned them before, Celek, Macklin, DeSean Jackson. Improve that offensive line a little bit. But again, first and foremost, protect the football. The Eagles lost this year because of turnovers. If there's one team in the entire NFL you could point to why they were bad, it's Philly. Turnovers. Well, and Cardinals. Quarterback. You do those two teams, it was pretty clear. You fix those two things, I think both Eagles and the Cardinals will actually be pretty good next year.
And that's why it was amazing that the Eagles got off to a 3-1 start with all those turnovers.
And it never got better.
The first team that was able to pull that accomplishment off, even though it was one turnover after another. And they then got beat up by that Cardinals team that you just touched on. They got really ransacked in Arizona and never looked back from there.
Eagles lost the turnover battle in every single game this year except for one. Their win against the Giants in week number 4.
That's going to come back to bite you eventually.
Oh, of course.
I mean, there's no way you're going to be able to withstand that.
No.
During 16 games.
And that Michael Vick. That's why I don't know if Chip Kelly's going to want to bring him back. You know, his offense, doing that read option and the pistol and all that stuff, it requires a smart quarterback that makes good decisions.
And can take hits.
And take hits. Does Michael Vick, based on his last couple seasons, fit any of those criteria? I'll let you make that decision for yourself.
And I think, as we mentioned, Nick Foles is even a bigger question because Foles, I read some quotes once Kelly's hiring was announced saying, listen, I'm your typical pocket passer, drop back out of the shotgun. I have not run this spread, you know, read option offense.
Well, you can still run the spread. You can run a spread with a drop back quarterback. Texas A&M did that for years. Their quarterback wasn't a runner. He just chucked the ball all over the field. Texas Tech, excuse me. They threw the ball all over the field, and they had a ton of success running that spread offense, too. You take a look down in Florida. They've had passing quarterbacks down there that have had a lot of success in that Urban Meyer system in the spread. Does it help to have a running guy to run that pistol, read option, run system, sure. But the passing part of the spread offense, you can use a pocket passer for that. It's not like you can't. You just have to adjust how you then run your running attack.
And I think that they'll also try to lean heavily on LeSean McCoy, given that he utilizes his Oregon running backs. And McCoy, there was a lot of criticism for Andy Reid for putting Michael Vick in those precarious situations because they abandoned the run way too much throughout the season.
Throw in Bryce Brown, too. Aside from his fumbling at the end of the year, he proved he can be an effective running back as well.
I think LeSean McCoy in the end and Bryce Brown perhaps are going to be the workhorses. Real quickly before we wrap up the show.
Sure.
You're getting kudos for your Cleo Lemon line.
I'm Mike Farmer.
Mike Farmer.
Nice.
Amazing name drop. Only reason I remember him is he was the worst QB in all of Madden one year.
Well, he was also the Dolphins quarterback when the Giants played the Dolphins in London.
That's right, why I remember. Rainy game.
Oh, boy, that was a mess. Thank goodness they fixed that field over there. Basically, you're playing on mud.
Resembled FedEx Field.
It did resemble FedEx Field. Actually, it's funny. It was almost like playing on a fairway in golf. It was soft. The grass was really short. Great for soccer. A bunch of 135-pound guys running around kicking a ball. Not so great for a bunch of 300-pound guys hitting each other and falling down on it a lot.
I don't think Mike from Long Island was too pleased while watching that game.
No, he was not. Well, no, they won, though. So he was probably happy at the end.
Yeah, but it was a struggle, though.
Eli, a rushing touchdown in that game, if you remember.
Did he smile after that?
Oh, Eli was very happy after the
rushing touchdown. Was he allowed
to? Yes, he was allowed to because he scored. Correct.
Everybody's happy when you score.
There's no smiling in football.
No.
Not when things are going bad.
Not at all. Especially down the stretch of this season.
Mike's never going to call back ever again.
I know. We may have lost Mike from Long Island.
I think we did.
I think we just went down one listener here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Well, that'll wrap things up here on this Thursday morning. So thankful for the callers and everybody on Twitter for chiming in.
How do you feel about Howard Cross tomorrow? He does This Week in Football on Yes. He could talk some playoff games. Your thoughts on that?
That works for me.
All right.
I'll call somebody from the Giants family onto the airwaves.
See if he can do it. I emailed Dottino about coming on next week yesterday, by the way. No response yet. Maybe he didn't like our power walking jokes from the other day.
Apparently. Yeah. Well, I've made some references on Twitter, too, regarding
him. Oh, you're taking shots at Dottino on Twitter?
I had you involved, too.
I tend to ignore your tweets.
It was something about the Knicks or so. I don't remember.
Oh, I don't remember.
I think it was about Carmelo Anthony's diet. That's what it was.
Oh, is that what it was?
And maybe that explains why Paul Dottino has not been mentally stable the last couple of weeks. Yeah, I know. I'm sure he's not a fan of me. Well, when has he been a fan of me?
Well, what has anybody really been a fan of
you? That's true. That goes without saying. I mean, and that's a good way to wrap up today's show. For John Schmelkov, Lance Meadow, we'll see you tomorrow morning here on Big Blue Kickoff, Giants.com. Have a good one.
Have a good one, folks.